Dan tried to shrug, but the movement sent a tendril of pain along his right arm. We've won a battle, maybe, not the war. The battle has been won definitely, Yamagata said. He was sitting on a stool, commandeered from one of the workshops next to the cabinet where Dan kept his meager supply of sherry. The Indian representative, a tall, turbaned Sikh with a handsome, curly, gray beard, said in the deep, authoritarian tones of an experienced diplomat, "The General Assembly will insist that the Soviet Union pay reparations for this outrage, and the IAC will undoubtedly move to allow competition for lunar resources."
"I'll believe that when I see it," Dan countered. "The Soviets won't give up their monopoly on the moon that easily."
"At the very least," the Sikh insisted, "the IAC will approve your claim for the asteroidal materials." "And allow future expeditions to collect more asteroids," Yamagata added. "Under IAC control," Dan added. "Of course. No nation should be allowed to claim ownership of a natural body of the solar system. And the orbit of such a body should be altered only after the IAC has approved of such a maneuver."
Lucita asked, "What will happen to the Russians who are on their way to Dan's asteroid?" The Sikh frowned at her, whether because a woman had the temerity to interrupt the men's conversation, or because she granted a private individual ownership of the asteroid, Dan could not tell. Yamagata answered, "They have been ordered by Moscow to return without altering the asteroid's present trajectory. A UN mission will be sent to the asteroid within a few days."
"They'll claim possession of it," Dan muttered. The Japanese grinned at him.
"Naturally. But the materials of the asteroid will be available for mining by Astro Manufacturing Corporation and its partner in the venture."
Dan drained the last of his amontillado.
"Do you really think," he asked, "that we've gained anything? That we've broken the Russian stranglehold?"
"Yes," Yamagata said immediately.
"Definitely. We have opened up the solar system for all the nations of the world. You have done that, Daniel. We all owe you a very great debt of gratitude."
"I'll accept a small percentage of your profits," Dan quipped. Yamagata laughed. The Sikh raised his stern white eyebrows.
They chanted for what seemed like hours. Dan's mind drifted. Their voices became a blurred background like the hum of electrical equipment or the soft lapping sound of waves at the beach. He was bone tired. His eyes closed. Suddenly realizing that he was being impolite, Dan snapped his eyes open again. The room was empty, except for Lucita, still sitting beside the bunk.
"What happened to everybody?"
"You fell asleep," she said softly.
"They left."
Seeing his empty liquor cabinet, Dan said, "They took the rest of the sherry with them."
"I'll bet that was Sai's idea."
"No," Lucita said, "I told them to. I didn't think they would leave without it."
He grinned at her.
"Come here."
She sat on the edge of the bunk and leaned over him. He kissed her, gently.
The phone buzzed. Holding Lucita close to him with his good arm, Dan clumsily snapped his fingers. It took two tries before the phone's little screen on the desk lit up and showed the face of a communications technician.
"Mr. Randolph?" she asked.
"Yes, I'm here."
"Oh, hard to see. Your room's dark."
"What is it?" Dan demanded.
"The President, sir. She wants to talk to you."
"The President of the United States?"
"Yes, sir."
The technician was an American, Dan could see, from her attitude. "She's calling from Washington."
Dan hesitated a moment, then, "Tell her I'm resting. Doctor's orders."
The technician's eyes went wide with disbelief.
"Dan," Lucita whispered urgently, "you can't make the president wait."
"I'll call her back," Dan said to the phone screen. "Tell her I appreciate her call, and I hope she takes advantage of what's been accomplished today. And give her my thanks for her help."
"Yes, sir," the technician replied. "Is that all?"
"That's all for now."
He snapped his fingers, and the phone screen went dark. Lucita looked alarmed.
"Dan, la Presidenta."
He pulled her closer and covered her lips with a kiss. "You are much more important to me," he said.
"America's an old nation, Lucita.
Maybe she'll become great again, maybe not. We've given her the chance. Now it's up to the people and their leaders. You and me, though, we have other places to go. other worlds to see. But I thought... He smiled at her. You are the only woman I'm interested in, Amata. I found what I've been searching for. She nestled her head against his shoulder. Truly? Truly. He nuzzled her dark, fragrant hair. Then he laughed softly. How would you like to spend your honeymoon on Mars? End of Privateers by Ben Bova. Narrated by John Polk in the studios of the American Printing House for the Blind, Louisville, Kentucky, for the Library of Congress, June 1986. For special distribution as authorized by Act of Congress under Public Law 89-522, with the permission of the copyright holder and the publisher, Tom Doherty Associates, 49 West 24th Street, New York, New York, 10010.